Wycombe Wanderers are like an elephant in a tree. Nobody knows how they got there, but they're going to fall down soon.
Hello there, welcome to EFL Unfiltered. Today we're at the home of Gareth Ainsworth to talk about the twin passions in his life, football and music, and of course, everything in between. Let's get cracking. Gareth, thank you so much for letting us in to your humble abode here. Glorious house, mate. It's such a beautiful place to set up and be able to talk to you. Music obviously being a major theme.
What gives you that idea?
But it just reflects, and we'll come on to talk about your family and your own music, but it seems to be as important to you as football is.
Yeah, you know, it's who I am. I thought it's got me through tough times, you know, and I think that having it, you know, music and having the upbringing I had and lucky to be involved in music all my football career, you know, and it's been tough balancing the two at times. It really has, you know, because, you know, they're big commitment things, you know.
And profession-wise, they're kind of opposite.
I think there's a saying that every footballer wants to be a musician, every musician wants to be a footballer, you know, so I'm somewhere in between, yeah. I suppose. But it's been great. Like I say, Mum was a singer, so that was always going to be ingrained, and luckily it's been passed down the generations. My daughter's a fantastic musician as well. But it's always been there. So when I've had some bad days, or when I've had some times out of work, you know, it's sort of, you know, you put a song on, can take you anywhere in the world, it can take you to any time in your life, and some of these musicians don't realize how important they've been in my life.
I suppose that's the key thing, isn't it, for anyone, the ups and the downs and that dealing with emotion, because football is awash with emotion, and probably even more so when you're the manager, when you've got to be seen to be in control of your emotions to a certain degree, and make sure that everyone in the group reacts in a certain way. For you, when it comes to the ups and the downs, is that where music is either the pick me up, or the one that levels you out, or the one that gives you solace?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think that it's helped where being a front man in a band. I'm thinking that as a manager, I was the front man. I was always that one who, you know, somebody once said to me, he said, you great, you know, got this idea, but you really sell this idea, you really perform this idea to the boys, and the boys will then buy into this what they are. And I think as a front man, almost a presenter, like, you know, you want to make sure that everyone's buying in, everyone's interested, you've got the room. And so that side of things, I think, was definitely a comparison in music. But the ups and the downs, they come in football like you wouldn't believe, you know. I think there's no other job we talk about that you get judged, especially as a manager, once, twice a week, you know, and it can be polar opposites at times, you know, from the best thing to the absolute worst thing. So having some steadies behind you, I think, is always important, and that's what it's been.
That semblance of being the man that people are looking at, that's a fundamental change between being a player, isn't it? You sit there in a group and a manager comes in and talks to you, and then suddenly you're the person where all eyes are on you. Yeah. So it sounds potentially being that role in a band helps you a little bit when you do go from being a player to being a manager, because you're used to eyes looking at you and the message that you're going to deliver.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been on a couple of courses and I score pretty high on the extroverts scale, you know, believe it or not. So that, it's always been there, you know, it's always been where I've enjoyed holding court, holding a room, being that leader. I was captain of a few clubs, you know, on the pitch and in the group of players. I think that when you're on the ball, definitely all eyes are on you then. And I was very aware of that. You know, I was aware that, you know, you have your moments on the ball, but you're part of the bigger picture, which is the team and the squad. As the manager, you know, there's not many hiding places. You take accountability for everything, especially when it goes wrong. And when it goes right, you almost share the credit with everyone else, and that's like I say, it's important to do that, to keep your players with you, to keep your players on board, but also it's the right thing as well, because I remember as a player, I took a few things into management, and if it had all been about the manager when it went well, then, you know, as a player, you think, you know what, we've given everything there, you know, so there's some real fine mental things that you've got to be aware of as a manager, and like I say, when it goes bad, take the pressure off the players, take it all, take all the accountability, but definitely share it with the players when it goes well, because they're a real big part of it. You know, people ask me about strengths as a manager. People, for me, are really connected with people. And you ask any manager, right, football is a small part of football management. It really is.
You know? As in literally the game on a pitch.
As the game and the coaching and the tactics, there's so much more to football management than just football. I mean, if I had one of those pie chart wheels and that, and you'd put a small portion as the football, you know, you've got, like you say, the different characters, the way you talk to them, the home lives of people, the language barriers sometimes, the groups not getting on, people coming with a problem every day. You know, it's not just your footballers, your staff as well, you know. And I'd say some managers or some head coaches will have 40, 50, 60 people under them. Mm-hmm. At any one day, somebody's going to have an issue. Somebody's going to have a problem. Yeah. It's just probability that is. And you're the man who solves it. You're the man who comes up with the answers. You're the man who makes them feel better. You're the man who's been in this position before, so you can describe it. So all that stuff takes much more time than just the football stuff. Mm-hmm. But then you've got to find out how to beat a team, who's doing well, what on these PDPs, these development plans on the players, who's doing what, who needs what. So there's so much more that comes into it than just going, right, we'll set up on Saturday and we'll beat this team. And that's, there's so much behind the scenes.
Is there any, and forgive me if the word I use is wrong, is there any ego to that? As in, not about it being about you front and centre, which you've already said, it's about sharing that responsibility. But there's a certain power that comes with being that person that people look to for the answers, isn't
it? Yeah, listen, I know a bit of a cliche, but, you know, with power comes responsibility. I think it was in the Spider-Man films I heard that first time. But
not quite made the wall yet, Spider-Man.
I didn't make the wall, yeah, but it's true. It's a true statement, you know. You have a load of responsibility. And do you know what, when you talk about ego, I don't think there's time for ego. Mm. I really don't. I think that being out the game told me that there is time to it consumes you. Being out of the game made me realize how much being in the game consumes you. Mm-hmm. You know, as a player, you've got to be at the top of your game every single day. You've got to eat right, you've got to live right. You know, I was lucky in a way to see the late 80s, early 90s, where the partying was still prevalent. Yeah. But, you know, I think Arsene Wenger came in, the Premier League came in, it all changed. You have to be an athlete now. So you've got to look after yourself. You've got to be a real professional. So that was as a player. And that consumed you being absolutely at the top of the game. As a manager, you can times that by 10, by 50 sometimes. You have to be absolutely on it every single day. The moment you walk in that training ground, you don't realize, but those players will look and find out what kind of mood you're in, how your energy is. Yeah. You know, they feed off you, you know. So, but I mean, you played, you know that the playing, the feelings we get from that were amazing. Not many people get to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you get grassroots players who play and they'll feel like they're going out, they're in a competition and five people turn up and it's a buzz for them. So, you know, we're so lucky that we ran out in front of thousands of people and that was the feeling.
That element of not being able sometimes to hear the crowd, I think is fascinating, because having covered matches where a manager's quite clearly getting the attention of the crowd, both on the way, and playing in games where we've both been there, where you kind of hear, oh, he's going a bit over there, which as a player, selfishly, you're going, thank God it's not us on the pitch. Is that a sense of you kind of really gelling with your team at that moment in time, feeling everything that they're feeling?
Yeah, I mean, looking back, it's probably when it was going well that you don't hear the crowd. You know, when I remember 20,000 people singing "You're Gonna Get Sacked" in the morning at West Brom. Believe me, you know, I did towards the end of the QPR time, and that.
What does that feel like?
Yeah, it's tough. You, like you say, lonely place, but also you also understand that it's. 20,000 don't mean that. It's just a great song to join along with, you know. And
it's a great sing along.
I think at home it would have been a bit more threatening. But no, away from home, you know, you get that. It's part of this pantomime that football is. Mm. I mean, there's some grounds where I heard it. You get the odd person. I used to deal with it in a way where I'd sort of agree with them. Like somebody be behind me. I played at some. I managed at some grounds. Remember, they weren't all. Super championship, you know, where the crowd really are quite far from the manager. Some places, you know, I've been where, you know, I remember Wimbledon's old ground, the bands are right behind you, and Newport, places like that. And somebody would turn around and go, Ainsworth, you're absolutely rubbish, you know, and I'd have to go, I know, but I'm trying my best. And it's sort of, placated it a little bit because he went, what do you mean I know? Like, you know, he wanted me to go back at him. Yeah, he's ready for a fight. But I used to think, like, don't get involved. Mm. And that's the best way, you know, not to get involved. But yeah, not hearing the crowd, yeah, is a funny one. Because as a player, I think I always heard the crowd. I always felt like, you know, that was part of the whole thing of being a footballer, you know, on there, the crowd's there.
You struck me as a player that fed off that.
Yeah, and I did, you know, I fed off that. And I think that I was that player that always gave everything. So, I know that every player does, but you could physically see it in me. Yeah. I don't have the skills that some players had. I mean, some players would dance around, but I'm giving everything. And I think that really resonated with a lot of football fans because they just want, they would go, give me that shirt, I'll give everything. And Ainsworth's giving everything, you know. And that was good. I think I made a lot of friends at places doing that. But yeah, it was weird. And you've really evoked that in me. And I'm thinking, yeah, it's going well. You know, you didn't hear him. You didn't hear him, you know.
The other side of it being a wonderful place to be and everyone being kind of on board and you're not hearing the crowd because it's going so magnificently is when the darker times are there because the natural rhythm of a manager means that's always just around the corner. The able to change gear between Gareth Ainsworth, boss, ex-footballer, answers everyone's problems and questions at work to the man that walks in through the front door that's a husband and a father to three kids, and then still is possibly part at work, whether it's lying in bed, staring at the ceiling, thinking, I should have done that. I wish he'd have done that. I wish so many different things, but tomorrow's another day where I can go again. What's the juggle like? What's the struggle like with that?
Yeah, listen, I would say that 90% of managers, I'd say we can all, when it goes bad, and when problems do come, we can all put this facade on for the press conference. We can all put this stock answers, give us media training. And I think a lot of people will see it. And they're desperate to get different answers out of managers sometimes. I think that's why we're probed so much. But not many are absolutely open and true to their emotions. You know, I played for Ian Holloway, who was fantastic. You know, what a great guy, motivator. And I think in some press conferences, you could physically see sometimes where it was hurting Ian, and he probably wasn't one who went to this guy who could answer. And we can all do it, no matter how difficult the questions are. I think I could get through anything.
Yeah.
But like you say, when you walk through that front door at times and the drive home from a game, when it's not gone right, you've got beat, you know you should have won, there's been mistakes, you've dropped a player and you lost the game, so that player you know now will be in smug mode going, you shouldn't have dropped me.
Yeah.
Even the night before games when I'm talking team selection and you know, it's tough. All these boys want to do is they want to train hard all week and they want to play on that Saturday, but you can only play 11 of them. So that's totally goes through your head as well, you know. And I think a manager who says, I don't care, just drop them. I did care. And I was that player, you know, and I've been through that moment. So, you know, I'm going to say, yes, I stayed awake at night without a doubt. You know, I would even think about what I'm going to say to the guy and how he's going to take it the next day, or in the game, why didn't we do that? Or why didn't I make that substitution 2 minutes earlier? You know, I went through a stage of getting my subs ready to come on the pitch and the opposition would always score. I used to think, what am I doing wrong here? Honestly, there was about a period of about 10 games perhaps where I'd go about 70 minutes. I'd go, get ready, you three, you're coming on, or you two. And as they were waiting to come on, the opposition would score. I'm thinking, what am I doing here? This is jinxed, you know. So all those things would go through your head. But I've got to be a dad to three children, like you say. I've got to come in and you know, be a great husband to Donna. And it was tough at times. It really was, you know. The kids have often said to me, Dad, you're on your phone, you know. And they've said something to me, and I've given them an answer, and they said, Dad, you're not listening. And you're on your phone at times, you're thinking of something else. And
how does that feel when they say that?
Yeah, it's tough, you know, it really is tough, because then you do put your phone down and then you go, right, I'm here now. But within 10 minutes, you're thinking, have I got that message from that player or that player's agent? And it is all consuming, you know. But what I will say is that, you know, perspective for me has been really important. I have got those foundations, you know, talked about the music earlier, a great family, you know, parents still around and still been that support for me, you know. So no matter how long I stay in this game, or I've been in this game, or if that's all I ever do in this game, I've been a lucky guy. You know, perspective is really important to me. And I go back to saying that we were so lucky to run in front of thousands of people playing. I've been so lucky to have some amazing moments as a manager, you know. I want some more, of course I do. But there is some tough times that come along with that.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a few seconds, but I quickly wanted to tell you about the EFL's fantasy football game. Fantasy EFL lets you pick players from across the Championship, League One and League Two. There's unlimited transfers, it's quick and easy to play, and you can even set up mini-leagues with your mates. And with monthly prizes, it's never too late to sign up. Search Fantasy EFL in your app store and play today.
The pleasure of being able to do my job is being able to speak to players and managers and colleagues of yours that, to a person, not just saying this because you wonderfully hosted us in your house here today, but the players speak of a very empathetic man, of a man that cares, genuinely cares, not professionally cares, but genuinely cares about a player and a person. So when you perhaps say you played with players that are going, I can't see Gareth Ainsworth being a manager, the empathy, the appreciation of another person's feelings, that's as seemingly, from what you're saying, comes first. And then the other stuff that you have to gain qualifications for, and the technical, the tactical, the mental and the emotional, has really dovetailed into that. So maybe your foundation as a boss is a slightly flipped one of, as you say, players seeing a game in a certain way. Oh, well, I changed to this system and put that play. Your sense of, well, he's not having a good game, but he is having a good game, or this part of the team's having a good game.
Yeah.
And buying into that from an emotional point of view. It feels vocationally, it's the emotional that set you off. But then obviously you filled it in with the technical and tactical as your career progresses, man.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say, look, I saw the game like Pep Guardiola when I was 21 years old.
Yeah.
No way. I will sit here now and tell you that emotional connection, social awareness, empathy, honesty, trust, respect. Yeah, I'm proud to say that I had those, I gave those. And I really believe that people and moments are what it's about. And that tactical side, yeah, I did have to work out. Yeah, without a doubt. I studied, I did hours and hours of footage, talking to other managers. And still, there'll be some people a lot better than me at that. But then I will say, I will connect with my players. I will get my players to do that extra run, to win that extra header, to believe in that philosophy that we've got for this game, for this season. You know, and I think that the evidence is there when, you know, you talk about that Wickham team that defied the odds. Defied the odds. The people are going, how the hell are Wickham Wanderers doing what they're doing? I remember Jack Grimmer. He's club captain now at Wickham. He came in one day and said, I've just seen the best tweet ever. He said, Wickham Wanderers are like an elephant in a tree. Nobody knows how they got there, but they're going to fall down soon. And I was thinking, I love that, Jack, you know. And that's the moments when you're thinking, you know what, we've got something special. And people was a success at Wickham. You know, I have... without doubt, I have to mention Richard Dobson, my assistant, was my assistant the whole way through. Dave Waits was my head of performance. You know, I had a guy, Kieran O'Doherty, that with these guys were brilliant in their areas. I was a manager. I managed it all, but I let them get on with it. I let the performance guys get on with the performance. They nailed it. The medical and Dobbo, my number two, you know, great credit for him on some of the tactical side. I'd say to him, right, to beat this team this Saturday, we need to do this. And he would go, right, okay. So like, if that's what you want, I'll put the sessions on to get this out the boys. And we'd work it, and then we'd go, and I'd stop and go, yep, you know what I was trying to do, boys, this is what we're trying. And we worked so well together. So, you know, those other little shortfalls, maybe you cover with other people. And I think most managers do that. But when it came to somebody with a big problem, I've had players crying opposite of me in my room. You know, I'm sure all managers have. I've had players going, my mum's been diagnosed with this and I don't know how to handle this. And they are serious moments. These are moments where you go, this is bigger than football now, but I need to get you through this because you're my, you're in my team. You're one of my boys. And I think that being a manager, you have to have the whole round package. But again, back to the pie chart, I think I was, the biggest section was the people, the emotions, the connection people. Maybe it was like on the score report, things to work on, maybe the tactical and the technical, but I had people around me, great people around me to cover that as well.
There's a sense of the paternal about that as well, isn't there? Caring for the people
in
your charge. People call it duty of care to give it a bit more of a official and a slightly cold title, but it's caring about people and individuals, isn't it?
I'd prefer it that way around. I'd prefer me to be really good at the care side.
Yeah.
That's me as a person. That was me as a person, you know, and I think that I'm a lucky guy to have grown up in a caring family and have a caring family. And I think I've taken that into football. And, you know, people say, what would you, you know, in the future, what would, when someone asked me, what was he like? What would you like him to say about you? I'd like him just to say, you know what? He had our back. He was all right. I don't need to go, oh, tactically, he was unbelievable. I remember when he did this one day. If people go, he had our back, he was good. He was good. He was there for you, the gaffer. I'm happy with that. Right, so this is what the kids call the shrine. Now, far from a narcissist, you know, but it's everything that people have sent me, you know, and just... I needed somewhere to put it up, so
it's a memory room, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing.
There's some proud moments, you know. There is some real proud moments. Obviously, the manager of the month things, and that was all at Wickham.
Oh,
and
manager of the year as well.
Manager of the year, that was my first season when we got to the playoffs, and Martin O'Neill presented that to me, you know, in London, and that was, you know, that was a nice moment. So,
slight gear change with this one, which is, can you read that out?
So Bracknell and District Sunday Football League, Premier Division, 15-16 season, Gareth Hearns with 19 goals. Listen, golden beer, that's all I'm saying, okay?
That takes pride of place. I love that next to the League Two Manager of the Year. The other bits as well, I mean, Wild Thing, obviously synonymous with your time. And that was a beer that was brewed in your honour.
Yeah, somebody made a beer called Wild Thing, sent me that.
And off the back of that and next to it, will you always be Wild Thing?
I think I'm on Mild Thing now. So. Let's leave it at that.
Given where you stand now or sit now, and this vast career as a player and a manager, is there a piece of advice that stands out? Is there a person that stands out?
Do you know what? There's a couple of pieces, you know. My first ever game was against John Still, who was at Dagenham and Redbridge.
Yeah.
And he said to me, and again, I don't want to be the cliche king, but don't get too high, don't get too low.
Mm.
And I really kept those with me. You don't want to think you've cracked it after one victory. And when you are beat, don't get too low.
Mm.
Sort yourself out. You know, you can always come back and the next game's just around the corner. I understood that. And the second time, I think was, I think Martin O'Neill maybe said this to me, Wickham legend, obviously. And we had a coffee after I'd lost my job at QPR. And he said to me, you're not a real manager until you've been sacked.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, that's a weird thing to say. Is that, why is he saying that? And do you know what? That was pretty soon after I'd been sacked at QPR. But I look back now and realize he's right, you know, because you've lost your job for doing it a certain way. You've got to reflect, you've got to look back and you know, learn lessons
inside and outside the dressing room and what it takes to be successful. Where right now does your admiration lie for people in football?
People will look at football and go for the top people, you know, and that's definitely, you know, without a doubt, there's some real brilliance at the top and they keep doing it consistently. You know, but someone like Thomas Frank at Brentford, you know, who probably... I could resonate with a little bit more because it's against the odds. Yeah. It's Brentford who, how are they doing what they're doing, you know? So I think that the way they win games rather than a perception of winning games, that's what I'm all about. You know, I think the game's always got to be about winning. I think Brentford do it well.
So given how long your career's been and given what you've experienced, can you have... in your mind, one moment that would stand out as the best
of times?
Wow. Probably one moment in each sort of domain of my career as a player. Do you know what? As a player, just making my league debut, you know, becoming a professional footballer. Mm-hmm. Then there's playing in the Premier League and scoring in the Premier League, which was magnificent as well. You know, I only played a handful, but they were amazing moments for me. As a manager, the Wembley promotion, you know, to the Championship, something that, again, will probably never be done again with that few amount of people in Wembley. And the boys that day, just when I talk about people and moments, that's all that mattered that day. And so that's got to be right up there with Football Management.
To go full circle, obviously, with all the musical influences around here, if there was a choice that was placed into your lap of managing Blackburn Rovers in the Premier League or your band's headlining Glastonbury on the main stage.
You can't do this to me, Brooks. You cannot do this to me, you know. Listen.
Which one of those instantly grabs you as a better?
Listen, if we God, mate, honestly, that's a tough one. That's a real tough one. Boyhood, 6 years old season to get a Blackburn Rovers, you know. I really difficult to choose. Somebody once said, Mick Jagger or David Beckham, whose life would you have? It's Mick Jagger all day long. Come on. Hey, come on. What a life he's had. Main stage at Glastonbury. That means that we're a very successful band and we're on world tours.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good, you know. That sounds pretty good. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, having spent all this time with you today, I'd pay to see you do either of those things. So, you
know. What's up, man? Bro,
it's been a pleasure.
Always.
Thank you so much.
Your fears, don't you cover up your face. I've seen the place where you go and hide. I find the ghost that haunts the corners of your mind. Find a way to exercise your life. Empty dreams are like dying here alone. Lie with me and find your way back home. 'Cause all I see now are black and burned out lands, an apocalypse, the place we used to know. Alright, yourself.
You know what? I was waiting for the tambourine bit, but it didn't feel right.